As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I am your host, Jordan Rodrigue, and with me, as always, my fabulous co-host, Rich Hammond. Rich, how we doing?
Well, Merry Christmas, everybody. Happy holidays to you. It's like, I feel for Rams fans. It's like Christmas morning. They've been looking at this package under the tree, you know, for a few days. Like, got this playoff spot wrapped up, just ready to tear into it on Sunday afternoon. And what ends up being in the box? Well, I don't think we're a family show. I don't think we could even say what was in the box. But it definitely wasn't a playoff berth, Jordan. So obviously, we're talking about a shocking loss to the New York Jets on Sunday afternoon, Jordan. You were there. I know we have a lot to talk about with this game, but what were your takeaways, or what's the thing you were thinking about on the drive home after watching that debacle?
You know, I could not even believe what I had just witnessed. I couldn't believe what I had just watched. And I wrote a column, and let me tell you guys, whenever I was thinking about this yesterday, I was like, I wonder if Rams fans have ever wondered about this. And if not, I'm going to tell you anyway. So this was a terrible game. This was a 23-20 loss to the winless, then winless New York Jets, the same New York Jets who've basically been handing opponents games in the hunt for Trevor Lawrence. Now, players and coaches, let me reiterate, players and coaches do not tank, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, you can make an argument for Greg Williams, but mostly players and coaches do not tank, especially players. It is such a disrespectful thing in their minds to even conceptualize tanking, but general managers and especially team owners tank. Okay. So there's where the disconnect has been with the Jets all year. Well, on Sunday, this young roster came out and just played their butts off and played like a team completely with their back against the wall with nothing to lose. And the Rams were asleep and sloppy and kept beating themselves over and over and over again in pretty much every way you can imagine, except for missing field goals, by the way, which we'll get to, and lost this game. And it was embarrassing, and they should be embarrassed. But I want people to know, too, it's such an interesting dynamic because you're up there in the press box and you're just, like, horrified that this is happening and shocked. And you cover a team without bias, or you try to. Like, you cover the good moments and you cover the bad moments, and you try to put the same energy in your approach with everything, right? Well, this was, like, unfathomable, right? This is just unfathomable. I thought this would have been a blowout in the first half, and I am certainly absorbing all of the "you were wrong" mentions that I'm getting, and that's fine. I accept it. I was wrong. I think most of us, if not all of us, were wrong because I thought this was going to be a blowout. When I have to write a negative column, especially after a game like this where the Rams totally beat themselves, they didn't even get beat. This was not like the Buffalo comeback attempt where you could actually kind of be proud of that loss. This is like you you served this game up on a platter to the one of the worst teams overall that this league has seen in many, many years, and just gave this game to them. When I have to write a negative column, I actually cannot sleep. I sit on my chair in my living room. I sit and I try to get my adrenaline to slow down and to sky down, and I try to get my heart to slow down, but I cannot sleep. I am so, it is so hard to write a negative or critical column. And I can openly admit that, like, I'm a wreck after I have to write a critical column, because I really respect what these guys do. But yes, I had to write the critical column after this game. And so basically I was up until probably about 4 a.m. and what I was doing, and you guys don't know this because I haven't been responding to them like I normally do, because everyone I get it is just venting. But I just sat up and I was drinking a glass of wine very slowly, and I was just reading comments. And because it wasn't, you know, I wanted to get a sense for how people were feeling. And it wasn't directed toward me, and I appreciate that, by the way. But it was like just comments about what people were taking away from this game. And then I went back and I watched some tape. And, like, I just can't sleep when I have to write a critical column. And so, you know, a former player came out this week from another team and said, as a player, he didn't realize how much it also sucked for media to cover a loss.
Yeah, I saw that.
It does suck.
Yeah. I mean, it must be nice to be a nice person, Jordan. What's it like? Really?
Rich, I saw you throwing out stats and sleeping sound. You probably were sleeping sound.
Oh, yeah. I got no problem at all. I really don't. No, but your point is very well taken. It's not that you cheer for wins and losses, but you do have a respect. And I think the thing is, Jordan, for my perspective on it is, you always want to make sure you're being accurate. I don't have a problem going after people. I want to be fair, and I want to be accurate. And I should say, and I'm sure everybody agrees with this, you always are in your analysis and everything else. You put a lot of thought into it and a lot of time into it, so everything that you write is very fair. I don't have a problem going after people or certain situations, but you do want to be right about it. And it is hard, especially when you watch a game live, like you do, and you're writing off of it that day. You don't really have a lot of time. You don't have time to go back and rewatch it two times. You don't really have time to talk to the people, especially.
You do if you don't sleep.
But we can't go in the locker room, no. So you don't even have that opportunity to kind of go around and be like, hey, what happened on that play? Or, you know, whose responsibility was that? You don't even have that option. So that is part of it that kind of makes me a little bit uncomfortable. It's just like, if you take somebody to task, you take a team to task, you want to make sure you've got the right stuff. You know, you want to make sure you're on the right track with what you're saying. So I definitely understand the sentiment there. But Jordan, I thought your column was on those grounds was extraordinarily fair and spot on, just in terms of detailing all the ways that the Rams probably could have written about 1,000 more words just on some of the ways that the things went wrong, from the offense to the penalties to even the special teams, the defense. I know we're going to talk about all of these things, but Jordan, I'm afraid to start myself. So where do you want to start? What should be our first topic of discussion?
You know, I think we need to start. Hopefully you guys read my column at theathletic.com, and then our columnist for The Athletic, Los Angeles, Molly Knight, also wrote a great column that's also up there. I sort of said it was a little bit of Rams therapy, because we just, you know, I think collectively as people who observed that game just needed to take a second and actually process what had just happened. And so in my column, you know, it was not one or two things, or even three things, or four or five. It was like every way that they could hand the game over, like I said, other than missing field goals, that they did it. Turnovers, penalties, missed tackles, inability to get off the field on one really long drive on third down, and then a couple of crucial third downs late in the stretch. I said penalties already. You know, poor quarterback play at times, an interception, questionable play calls, and God, I can't wait to unpack those too.
Oh, yeah.
But I think we need to start with the defense, because one thing, Rich, I think that this defense under Brandon Staley. So first of all, the third downs were atrocious. That first series where they allowed 4 third down conversions on one drive, and the final one was a touchdown. And they only converted 7 third downs through the entire game. And so really, if your offense is not scoring points, that first drive, that's really that put them in the hole. That was really, really a crucial situation. One of the issues I have is, so we know that not every position group on this defense is like superstar quality. Like, we know that the defensive line is among the best in the league. We know that the secondary is among the best in the league. But what the Rams have had to do, and especially with injuries to their inside linebacker position, is they've had to sort of mask the issues in the middle of the field. They've done that by adding extra safeties to the equation. And so when teams try to stretch like a Troy Reader, who should not be stretched horizontally in space against a running back or a faster catch and run receiver like Deebo Samuel, for example, you have to have a safety coming down to help and support in the perimeter. And the Rams obviously are missing now Terrell Burgess, who's injured. They are missing who would have come in as an extra safety. They're missing Taylor Rapp, who is injured, who would have come in as an extra safety. And now they're missing Nick Scott, who has been playing his butt off before going on the COVID reserve list because a teammate tested positive and he was a close contact. So they did not have sort of those tools that helped them mask issues in the middle of the field. And you really saw that because immediately that first third down where Troy Reader missed the tackle, and, you know, Troy Reader came back and had a good game, had a great pass breakup on the goal line and helped hold the Jets to a field goal in a sudden change situation. And so, you know, but this really, this first missed tackle on third down that allowed the conversion was really crucial because he got stretched wider than he is able to play. And it's not a knock on him. He's just better in shorter space. He's better when he's going downhill. He's even had a couple of great pass breakups in the last couple of weeks. But when you stretch him as wide as the Jets did, and then you're also using a motion, which the Jets also did, and we'll get to that in a minute too, you're asking him now to play outside of himself. And that's something that Brandon Staley's defense had not previously really been asking their players to do. They were always able to scheme to ask players to play within themselves as parts to a whole. And because you're missing some personnel now, and then also you're failing to recognize and acknowledge some of those motions, and then you're also failing to communicate that, that's a huge problem. And that's where you saw finally, you know, where this defense can have some weaknesses if they don't fix that.
Yeah, every team's going to have depth issues. And that was one of my issues going back. I mean, I'm not going to do too much backseat driving here, but you go back to the offseason, they didn't do a lot they didn't do really anything to upgrade that inside linebacker position. You know, thinking at the time that they had everything that they needed internally. Well, that was, even in a best case scenario, that was a kind of a tenuous bet. And then to have some injuries, well, then you just said it perfectly, Jordan. You're relying on guys who might normally not be in those situations, and you're relying on them to do things that they don't normally do. And when you have, again, you can talk about the winless Jets, but they're still trying to win football games, and they're still looking for things to exploit, and they found some things there. So I'm glad you started with the defense, Jordan, because, you know, a lot of people, and I know we're going to talk a lot about Jared Goff and Sean McVay and the offensive line and penalties and everything else under the sun. But, you know, even if you take away, look, there were a couple short fields, right, where the Jets get a couple field goals off of a block punt and a turnover, but they still allowed, if you would have said going in that the Rams would even allow 2 long touchdown drives like they did at the start of the first quarter and the start of the third quarter, I don't think anybody would have believed that. Even that, this is a Jets team that had scored 10 or fewer points in 7 of their first 13 games. This is a team that in more than half of their games did not even get to 14 points against teams that were a lot less stout than the Rams were on defense. So that was a real big surprise to me, Jordan, especially the way they opened up the third quarter, because I thought, well, they're going to get this figured out. You know, some of the things that we're talking about here, they're going to figure out these coverages, they'll make these adjustments like they have all year, right? I mean, that's been a staple of this defense is making those adjustments. And then what happens? The Jets get the ball to start the third quarter, 72-yard touchdown drive. And then they get it back, and they end up kicking a field goal, but they make it all the way down to the Rams' 3. It was second and goal at the 3-yard line. Easily could have been another touchdown there. So they did get it figured out a little bit in the second half, which put the Rams in position to almost pull off that comeback. But yeah, the communication breakdowns, Jordan, also, you know, you can talk about the linebackers, but a lot of maybe some handoff stuff with the DBs and the linebackers, just things that we're not really accustomed at all to seeing from these Rams.
Yeah, something I had a huge issue with was things that the secondary normally is very good at were very problematic, and diagnosing the motions that the Jets were using, they weren't doing anything the Rams haven't seen. And really, like I said in previous podcasts, the Rams also pattern match. So there really is no excuse for not being able to diagnose some of these motions. But you can even see, so, you know, there's a couple plays, a couple of key chunk yardage plays. And I'm thinking of one in particular on that third quarter drive where you can see the indecision on the motion. So you have a receiver, a running back coming across in motion. And like in this example, it was, I believe, Troy Hill, who started coming across and then stopped halfway and stood pat. Well, the ball ended up going to the motion player and there was nobody in coverage. So Jordan Fuller has to come down. And then it looks like Jordan Fuller is giving too much of a cushion when that's not actually the right case. It should have been somebody else's person. Like at that point, either Troy Hill is supposed to travel all the way over and cover on the perimeter, or is supposed to switch with someone on the inside and that player is supposed to come over, right? So it really was a example of miscommunication that I have not seen a lot of from that Rams secondary. And those motion plays hurt them on a couple of that one, I believe was a second down, but there was a couple of third downs and the one that I pointed out that kept that drive going in the first quarter, they could have gotten off the field in that first quarter if not for that missed tackle. But again, you know, Troy Reader misses the tackle, but also is sort of set up to fail in that scenario as well. Because again, you know, I know we want, you know, we talk about inside linebacker depth and whatever, but the Rams, once Brandon Staley came in and says, here are the ways you will never have to pay an inside linebacker because you're going to have enough really good safeties. And Brandon Staley is a secondary coach at his roots. And he says, hey, we've got some really good safeties on this roster, so you actually don't need to ask your linebackers to do too much because we're going to bring a safety down to help and use him as a hybrid player all the time. But then all of a sudden, you know, now you're thin at inside linebacker, okay, but you already knew that. You knew you would be, and you sort of planned for that. But then at the same time, you maybe didn't plan to be so very thin at safety because you had a plethora and more than most teams would carry on your roster. And the reason you had that, and it was at the time, you know, it's smart planning, but then you also don't factor in, you know, one of them's going to be a close contact for a guy who tests positive for COVID-19. And you don't expect one of them to hurt his ankle. You don't expect a third one to hurt his knee. And then now all of a sudden you're facing a serious issue. And the Jets exploited that on those plays. And especially then now your communication is all screwy, and you definitely see that on a couple of those plays. And while, you know, those plays did not decide the game by any means, because it's still extremely embarrassing that the Rams were not able to score but 3 points in the first half, and then, you know, sort of mounted the most wobbly comeback I've seen in many years. You know, that's still, it's still not acceptable. But those inability to diagnose, those miscommunications, and then those areas where normally you would have help, now you're asking players to come outside of themselves to make a stop. That's not what Brandon Staley's defense is about. And the other thing is Nick Scott, the absence of Nick Scott, and I really feel for him because obviously this is not his fault. Like these guys just, this is league protocol. This is the world that we're in right now. And I really feel for him because he was crucial. Missing him was crucial. If Nick Scott's in the game, I don't think that they make that third down conversion. The drive stops and then the Rams get the ball back and you can basically reset the game 0-0, right? And that's huge. But and then later on, the punt's blocked. Nick Scott's the protector.
Right.
Nick Scott is like one of the best special team's players in the league, and he's the protector. And so, you know, instead the protector gets blown up, the punt gets blocked, it's a turnover, short field, field goal. Now you're looking at 23-20, you know, ultimately 23-20 instead of 20-20, right? Or some formulation of the three-point differential through that space. And it's not for lack of the defense played super well on those sudden change, but there were just one or two little threads that the Jets were able to pick on pretty consistently on those longer drives. And that made such a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, it was shocking to see. I mean, you could see it right away. I mean, the third you go through them on that first drive, third and five, little swing pass to Ty Johnson, doesn't get picked up, first down. Third and four, that was a running play. Frank Gore gets 5 yards. Third and one, again, another swing pass or dump. I don't know what it was, but he hit Ty Johnson, who was wide open for a 6 yard pass. And then third and five from the Rams 18, again, finds Ty Johnson. These were not plays that Sam Darnold was making down the field. It's not like he was picking apart this Rams secondary. It was he was extending plays sometimes, which Sam Darnold can do. And then a lot of times he was just, they did a nice job, especially early on with Ty Johnson, like you said, either bringing him in motion or kind of hiding him behind the line there for a second and waiting for those linebackers to the DBs to make a mistake or follow the wrong guy, and then they just kind of snuck him out there and hit him. So it was shocking to see live, just because you weren't used to seeing that. So yeah, I totally understand what Staley's, you know, thoughts are, especially with the linebackers. I just, and I'm not going to relitigate the draft, but I just think if you pick a guy up who kind of has those coverage skills a little bit more, then maybe it helps here. Maybe then you don't have to worry about getting exposed or getting guys in bad spots. So I think if I could go back and redo the Rams draft, that's one thing I would do. Maybe the main thing I would do. And I'm still a little bit surprised that didn't happen. But again, that's not why these plays broke down. There was clearly some communication issues. And like you said, Jordan, you know, injuries and not having those guys who can typically make those plays, it hurts. And look, the Jets made good plays too. I mean, they were well-designed plays. And Sam Darnold read them well and executed them. So you have to give them a little bit of credit too. But I think we were both just shocked to see the Rams make those mistakes on things that they're so usually very good at.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Yeah, and we can like relitigate the draft for probably hours, and I'll still probably be in the camp of believing that you didn't need to necessarily pull the trigger on an inside linebacker. You thought Traven Howard was going to be healthy. Yeah. He unfortunately got injured. You thought Micah Kizer was going to be healthy through the year. You also knew that you had so many talented safeties and you've been showed by your new defensive coordinator how you can scheme out of putting too much pressure on your weakest defensive position and instead capitalizing on your stronger defensive positions, being your secondary and your defensive line. Sure. So I still don't believe that you would have needed to do that. But and then you also would have, God, I'm going down a rabbit hole now. You also would, like, if you get an inside linebacker in the third round, you're not getting Cam Akers, right? Or, you're not getting Van Jefferson. These guys who are going to be really important in the future, like, you have to always make a trade-off. You aren't getting Jordan Fuller if you pick a linebacker in the sixth round. Jordan Fuller is going to be like a 10-year pro for them. So we can, like, maybe this April we're going to do a huge mega episode of all of the little threads we can down the line, because now I'm going down a rabbit hole. Right. But anyway, I digress. So, Rich, it was so uncharacteristic, and you're right. That's a great way to put it, because It was just stuff that was weird. You're just not used to seeing it. And then all of a sudden, you just start feeling like, holy crap, could this happen?
Right.
Could this happen? And then the turnovers. Let's talk. I mean, we have talked about the defense. And again, I want to give them credit for their ability on those sudden change situations. That's the hardest thing to do. Right. Just the hardest thing to do. And they played, you know, to hold them to field goals both times on sudden change. I mean, yeah, it's the Jets. But again, you know, that game was so weird, you know. So I think that was really outstanding effort on those. But the turnovers, Rich, oh my goodness gracious.
Yeah. I mean, we can look, I know we're probably going to talk a lot about Jared Goff and I, you know how I am on Twitter. I can't stop a good back and forth, but.
And then you just go to sleep.
Yeah, I don't care. Yeah, I just start the fire and then let everybody else argue about it overnight. So, and I just log back on and see what I missed. Yeah, look, don't think that this is going to be entirely anti Jared Goff from me, because I have some thoughts about the way things went later in the game. But that interception he threw was awful. And he should have had a second one on that ball that got tipped. And then I think it was Gerald Everett who ended up making that really good catch. That also was not a good throw. It was a very athletic play by that defender, whoever it was, but was not a good throw. So Jared made some bad decisions there and got away with them. And then the punt, I believe, I didn't even remember. Jordan, I had somebody DM me on Twitter. I guess Johnny Hecker had one blocked in that game against Carolina, the season opener last year. I had absolutely no memory of that. Somebody asked me if he'd ever had one blocked when he was in LA, and my instinct was to say no, he hadn't, but apparently he did. That's
Colin Jones.
Did it? Okay, so you remember this. Okay, all right.
Future special teams coach of some team, Colin Jones.
Okay, yeah. Was it clean? Do you remember it? Because I have no memory.
I don't remember it, but I remember typing, because Colin Jones was kind of like a running, he wasn't a running joke. The fact that he was a special teams ace and like, they would never play him at, say, an actual safety. Like, this is not a Nick Scott situation. Like, Nick Scott could come in and has come in and played really good safety for the Rams in the extra defensive back package. Colin Jones, like, you just don't put him at safety. He is going to be playing on special teams. He would run fakes. He would do all this stuff for the Rams. But, oh, my God, you shield your eyes if he has to go in at safety for whatever reason. So that was kind of the longest running joke. And so I remember that play because I remember typing Colin expletive Jones. So
nice.
I remember that in my little Slack conversations with my beat partner at the time. But, yeah, that was I do remember that. It was like something like no punt blocks in 120 attempts for Johnny Hecker.
And that was his only one, that one in Carolina was his only one since 2014. So he went basically six plus years with one. And then this one was just totally clean. I mean, this was not Johnny Hecker. It wasn't like he bobbled the ball or, you know, held onto it for too long or something. I mean, that was a clean block, and you're just not accustomed to seeing that from the Rams. And again, I think goes back to some of the special teams issues. We talked about it last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, how these things just kind of keep popping up. And this was another one. But Jordan, like you said, Nick Scott not being there, I mean, that's a crucial player in that position. But wow, I mean, this is where the game started to get away. It's like all the Jets are looking for is a puncher's chance, right? And they get the blocked punt and they turn that into 3 points and the Rams get it back. And Jared Goff throws a terrible interception and they get 3 points out of that, and they're up 13 to nothing. It could have been much worse. It could have been 21, but they start feeling like they've got a chance, and the Rams start standing there on the sidelines like, what's going on here? We're supposed to be like resting by now, and instead we're down by 13 to the New York Jets.
Yeah, there was some weird body language to me. I think, you know, it was – I don't, because we're in a glass, and I know this is one of your pet peeves.
Yes.
We're in a glass enclosed press box, so you can't hear if there's things happening down on the sideline. Like, you can't hear, and sometimes even with the crowd in an open air press box, you're better able to gauge what the energy level is on the sideline. But it was like people just seemed astounded, I would say, And that was up in the box too. I mean, everyone up there was like, is this really happening right now? This was the largest lead. I retweeted it. Pro Football Reference had it out. It was like the largest lead the Jets have had in a game since 2019, like back deep in 2019. Or maybe if it's even earlier that I'd have to look it up, but like, it was really, this had not happened. I mean, and we all know that this had not happened. It was so lopsided, in fact, in the Jets' favor. I was like, am I just going to wake up all of a sudden and be, you know, wake up in my bed and sit up and say, okay, it's game day, time to go to the stadium and have like a Groundhog Day situation? I mean, my goodness, it was weird. Yeah. And I don't know what you do at that point, because your offense is just going three and out, three and out, three and out. You're not getting anything going on the ground. At a certain point, you're making poor decisions with the football. And I agree with you. I don't think this game, you can't blame this game on Jared Goff. Uh-oh. He was a part of it.
Don't go on Twitter, Jordan.
Am I gonna hear it?
Well, Jared Goff is worse than TJ Rubley if in some circles of the Rams universe. But no, go ahead.
And it was just ever like and I have blamed Jared when I feel like it's Jared's fault in certain games, like Miami. Oh my goodness gracious. But okay, so this game, I mean, yeah, the pick was horrible, like you said. But as a whole, there were so many issues just everywhere. Yes. Penalties. I mean, I believe it was their second series. They had a holding, or was it it was either a false start or holding. I know you have your notes in front of you, Rich. And Joe Noteboom gets called. And so then they're backed up. So now you're in short yardage. And then at some point, you just kind of give up your third down by running a draw and like all this stuff. Right. That's just like, are you guys even here? Are you awake today? Who's got the smelling salts on the sideline? How can we triple those up? Like, where is the energy? Where is the Jets were literally trying to just punch their way out of a corner, and they just had nothing to lose.
Yeah.
Literally nothing to lose.
Right. I think you look, I mean, I'm half joking there, but yeah, people look, you're not going to hear me say that Jared Goff had a good game. He did not have a good game. But no. You can put him in the basket of things that went wrong.
It's all just a big crap bucket.
It really is. Yeah, it's not like an Easter bucket, but a big crap bucket. That's what it was. and he deserves to be on that list. He absolutely should be on that list. But there are so many other things that went wrong in this game too. If Jared Goff had played a perfect game, I'm still not convinced they would have won this game. They certainly wouldn't have won it running away, because so many other things went wrong. The offensive line, I don't think did a very good job. And beyond the penalties, there were several of them that were killers. Runs that got called back because of a hold, the holding penalties that you talked about on pass plays. I mean, this was not, they got it going a little bit in the fourth quarter, especially with the run protection. They got it moving a little bit. But I
got a bone to pick with that too. Rich.
Late in the game?
No, in the third quarter when they started to finally get some drives together. But go ahead. Yeah, got a bone to pick with that. Okay. But go ahead.
Well, I definitely want to get to the second half stuff. But yeah, there's so many things across the board, and it just, you know, and then Jared makes his own mistakes and things just spiral. So it was one of those things where I'm sorry, I can't sit there and say that I'm going to say that Jared Goff is the reason that they lost that game. I'm sorry. If you believe that, that's fine. I'm not saying you're a bad person or you don't know anything about football. We just happen to disagree. I just happen to see too many other things that went wrong that contributed to the that were contributions to the basket of crap.
Bucket.
Yeah, okay. Does it happen?
The bucket of crap.
You know, a basket would be, you know.
A basket has like woven, it's woven. So you got to worry about springing a leak at that point.
You're right. Bucket would be better.
You probably want one of those like Home Depot buckets.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Maybe like a full garbage bin because of how much crap.
There was a lot there. There's a lot to haul. Yeah.
It was a collective crap bucket.
It was.
So then you get to halftime and they've got a field goal. Which good for Matt Gay. I mean,
yeah, great kick.
Someone said this to me on Twitter. Someone said, "Well, Jordan, at least we're not talking about missing kicks or changing kickers."
Right.
I was like, you know what? I like your attitude.
<That's right>. One thing down.
I was like, you know, one yeah. down. I was like, well, at least they got that fixed.
Right.
It couldn't still be a clean special
right.
teams
Can't
game.
Can't putt
of
now,
course.
But yeah. can make field goals. So yeah.
Good God, yeah. But good for Matt Gay. He was on with us this morning, and we were talking about how you know it's just so weird because he's making kicks in nearly complete silence, and now. Unlike other years when there's a crowd screaming their head off to try to distract him, and then a kicker can doesn't really affect the kicker. He can just kind of go in a tunnel because the noise becomes almost like white noise. But now these defensive linemen who are trying to line up to block the kick, they're just like yelling stuff at him and he can hear it now. So he was talking about how weird it is and how when he's in silence, he has to actually repeat a word to himself over and over and over again to sort of simulate that crowd noise and that white noise. And I asked him what it was, and he was like, "Well, I can't tell you because then the other defensive lineman will start screaming that at
me." Wow, that's a great point. Yeah,
I know. And I was like, "Oh man, good point, Matt. Yeah. Good point." But anyway, so good for him. He's probably going to be sticking around. He'll get a tender from the Rams if he keeps kicking well and all that. So anyway, they're down. They've got 3 points at the half. This is one of those really rare scenarios where we're now calculating McVay's record when he's losing at halftime and held without a first half touchdown. All losses this year, by the way, when the Rams have been held without a first half touchdown.
0-3.
You are correct. And so that's the weird. Now everything's so weird. We're like, okay, well, there's still another half to play. This team's been pretty good at adjusting. Now, you know, what are they going to come out and do? Well, the answer to that is not much.
Yeah, that was the one that surprised me the most, Jordan, because I thought, okay, you know, even though the Jets are getting the ball back first here, the Rams are going to figure this out. They're going to, you know, get it back to the offense and then things will get rolling. It didn't seem like, you know, after Matt Gay makes that kick, they're only down by 10 points at halftime to the Jets, right? You think like this is still a piece of cake. They're going to, and that's I even asked on Twitter, Rams fans, like, oh, Rams fans, what do you think the final score is going to be? And I think I didn't count them all, but I'm going to say 9 out of 10 of them said the Rams were going to win, because that's what I thought was going to happen too. I thought, okay, Jets are going to get the ball here. The Rams are going to have this figured out. It's going to be a 3 and out, or maybe they'll punt from the 40, and you know, the Rams will get it moving and they'll score. And then what happens is they come out and drive 72 yards and mix it up very nicely with the run in the pass, even though they weren't really moving the ball on the ground all that well, but they mixed it up and made some big plays, and all of a sudden, they take almost 7 minutes off the clock and they're up 20-3. And then, so you're looking at it and it's like, wow, the third quarter is almost halfway over now. And the Rams are down by 17. That was just shocking to me.
It was stunning. And this is also what we talked about at the beginning, where some of the motion plays were really hurting them. This is when you really started to see down on the field, the reactions after plays. So on that drive, on that long Jets drive to open the third quarter. So they are now able to bite off a couple of longer passing plays. There was a 21-yard pass, and then there was also a 22-yard pass, yeah. And that really helped them set up shorter yards for Frank Gore to run on sort of those shorter yardage downs. And this is when you're starting to see, and then also on that, there's a second down pass for 11 yards that I had mentioned before that was, I think, the one where Hill was starting to come over and then stopped. Yeah. So those things were really, really killer, because that's when you start to see in the third quarter, there's some frustration, there's some miscommunication. Players are talking to each other and gesturing to each other after plays. Now, I'm not saying there was like arguments or anything like right. that, but it was clear miscommunications. Like, clearly, this is not the same team that would go into the halftime or go into the locker room at halftime and come out and kick the door down defensively on somebody and score a defensive touchdown and adjust and limit scoring to, you know, such a tiny number that they had all season. This was something completely different yeah. that these guys were doing. And especially when on that drive, multiple mistakes in a row, again, cannot get off the field on a short run on third down on that third and two, but the yardage, they had it. The one that was killer was that second and 13 that set up the third and two. Again, you can get off the field on that drive if you just have your guy coming over, and nobody came over. And so then that's an 11-yard gain. It sets up a 2-yard run for Frank Gore. He gets three, and then they followed up with a deep pass. And then you just cannot get off the field, and now you're on your heels. And when they talk about what a defense is struggling when they're on their heels and holding accountable, this is exactly what they're talking about. Yeah. And usually, you know, when the Rams offense is actually working like it's supposed to, this is what they do to people.
Oh, absolutely.
But it was it was being done to them. Yeah.
No, absolutely. And look, I'll credit Sam Darnold too. I mean, this guy's taken a lot of hits, metaphorically and physically. He's taken some blows, but he hung in there and made some really good plays. I mean, there were times when it looked like he was kind of dead to rights there, and he was about to get sacked, and he would spin out of it and you know, extend the play with his feet and make a play down the field. So, USC fans, I covered Sam a little bit at USC and used accustomed to seeing him make those plays, and he has that skill set, and they did a nice job at times of, you know, turning some what looked to be busted plays into some plays down the field. So I thought Sam did a nice job there. But yeah, it's just that was the big one, Jordan, because from then what happened was the Rams offense got going. I mean, they scored touchdowns on their next two drives, but they were so far behind the eight ball at that point. Again, you're down by 17 midway through the third quarter, and you pretty much have to be perfect from then on out. And they certainly were far from perfect.
One thing that really bugged me, and of a long list, I'm sure, that bugged many people who are watching this game. One thing, though, that actually really did bug me quite a bit, that I think Sean McVay had an understandable answer to in his post-game press conference, but it still bothered me. In the third quarter, that's when they really started, you could really tell they were going heavier 12 personnel.
Right.
In the third quarter, all of their tight ends were active on Sunday, all of them. So that's notable because Gerald Everett had to leave the game at one point and get evaluated and then cleared from evaluated for a concussion and then cleared. But you can't use that as a reason why you're not going 12 because all of your tight ends are active, all of them. And you don't go into 12 personnel really as notably in terms of really, really heavy and then targeting your tight ends and then really using that for heavier helping Cam Akers. And then you start seeing it. 11-yard run Cam Akers to the left side where he's been really successful, especially when you've stacked your blockers on that side in 12 personnel. And you start seeing it. But it's not till the third quarter and the Rams are down 20-3. And part of that, Sean McVay, I thought that was a fine explanation. He just said, we just kept going three and out. We could not even start changing our groupings up because it sort of comes in its own timing. Like you convert a couple of third downs out of 11, right, and then you can go into 12. That's kind of how they had sort of clearly planned this game. Well, he just said we just couldn't. It wasn't a matter of not getting into it. We just couldn't get into it. And so it's not till the third quarter that they're starting to use the thing that has been working for them over the last 2 weeks or so. And you know, it just was really that was something that bugged me because it was clearly like, okay, now it was just this, and you could explain it away, and that's fine. But it's almost like this feeling of, you're waiting until now to wake up?
Right.
Like, that doesn't cut the mustard.
No, it really doesn't. I understand what Sean is saying, but that's also a little bit of a crutch for him, if we're going to be honest. This has been a thing in the past with him, too. Well, we just didn't get enough plays. We didn't get our – okay, but it's okay to do it on first down. You can put a guys in 12 personnel and try to run the ball on first down and see what happens. Maybe something good will happen. It's within the realm of possibility. So yeah, that's really frustrating, Jordan. And again, I have no idea what the communication is like on the sidelines, and I'm not going to you know, make judgments based on things that, you know, conversations that I'm not a party to. But when you see it happen and you see it have success, I think it's only natural to say, well, why did it take this long? Why didn't somebody put their heads together in the middle of the first quarter or the start of the second quarter and say, hey, you know what? We had a plan. It's just not working. And we need to make adjustments right now. And I think Rams fans and Rams fans, no, I think Sean McVay has done a fantastic job. I'm not being critical across the board, but I think even Rams fans who think he's done a fantastic job will say that's been one of his weaknesses over the years is that ability/willingness, whatever it might be, to make those quick adjustments during a game when it's pretty clear that your game plan is not working. So this is not entirely new from Sean and from this offensive staff or what have you. But you can see the difference. You don't have to be a coach to see the difference when they started doing more of that. So yeah, that was striking to me too, Jordan. But can we talk about my favorite sequence too? I don't know if you have anything else to talk about the third quarter, but I definitely want to get into the fourth quarter.
I would love to talk about your favorite sequence, Rich.
Boy. Okay. All right.
I can hear your paper shuffling.
Yes,
too.
I have my notes. Yeah. I brought notes. Yes. So, okay. Jordan, I actively mean this. I want you to interrupt me when you think I've said something wrong. Okay. Or based on your understanding or based on, you know, your knowledge of the situation. Okay. So the scenario is the Rams are trailing 23-20. It's third down and six. It's third down and four from the New York 37. There's plenty of time left. I'm not sure exactly. I think there's about 5 minutes left somewhere around there. Okay. It's third and four from the New York 37-yard line. Even with my notes, I can't get this right. This is how worked up I am about it.
4 minutes and 5 seconds.
Thank you. 4:05. Okay.
Yeah.
The play that is called from Sean McVay, based on my understanding, the first read is the play that was made, which was a pass to Cam Akers deep down the left sideline. First of all, I don't like throwing the ball there. You had been running the ball well. Cam Akers' previous two carries, even though one of them got called back, the previous one was for 22 yards. It got called back on a block in the back by Tyler Higbee. Really didn't influence the play that much. It maybe was even a borderline penalty. So it's not like that sprung Cam Akers for a 22-yard run. It was a good run. I would have run the ball there. Regardless, let's throw that out, okay? It's a third and four. Jared makes that read and throws that ball. I thought it was both a bad call and a bad decision by Jared.
Yes.
Okay.
And it can be both, guys.
Yes, this is the I'm so glad you said that. Right, it is though, right? Because what if Jared, and again, I'm not looking at it right now. I don't know what the protection was like. But he made that throw pretty quick. And I think if he goes through his progression a little bit, he finds a better option there, doesn't he?
He admitted he would have liked to go through his progression. He had at least another half second to a whole second. I was crouched over a laptop in the press box post game watching this over and over and over again with Eric Williams from SI. And he absolutely could have held on to the ball and gone through his progression, but threw instead I'm going to let you finish, Rich. So you go ahead.
Well, just to me, like as soon as the ball went in the air and I saw where Cam Akers was and how he was being defended, I thought this play has no chance. Like, I mean, I'm not even sure even if it was the perfect throw that it would have been a complete pass. I don't know what Jared was seeing there that made him think, I guess just the coverage and a confidence in Cam Akers. But as soon as I saw the ball in the air and I saw where the route was headed, I thought there's no chance on this play. It looked like a, you know, last second kind of heave that had no chance. So I did not like the play call there, nor did I like the execution by Jared Goff.
Yeah, I would have run the ball there.
Okay.
Just agreeing with you, I would have run the ball on that third down, keeping in mind that the Rams were already had already decided. Now, I confirmed this with Matt Gay this morning. I asked him this directly. At that point, that it had already been decided, this is four down territory for us no matter what. So you're downs on third and fourth. You're not going to send your kicker out. So your downs on third and fourth have to complement each other. Okay? So yes, I would have run the ball. We can not just assume, but we know that Sean McVay was operating in four down territory at that time. Okay? So your third down has to at least help your fourth down. It has to, it in a perfect world, it converts.
Right.
But it has to at least help or complement in some way your fourth down in a worst case scenario, right?
Absolutely.
So the other thing is, I know why that read is there for Jared. It looked like his first read, but you shouldn't go there. And I know why that play design put that route there for Cam Akers, and it's because that play is on tape as something that works against Miami in the latter part of the game. That play is on tape a couple games later, and it works.
Right.
And so you know that the Jets have seen this on tape. So you design that play to Cam down the sideline. You design it into your offense, and that's how you stretch and get your matchup over there so you can single another guy in the middle.
Right.
And that's what happened.
Right.
There was a guy coming loose in the middle of the field in some of these high-low concepts. The lows were coming open. Right. And so Jared and Sean both said after the game that on that play, you should progress through the down a little bit more. I also hate the fact that you throw there because it is a low probability play, even if it's a receiver.
Yes.
At best, it's a 50-50 play. At best, on a deep shot, 20-plus yards, 15-plus yards downfield, percentage-wise, through years and years of league-wide data, and we talked about this last week, it is a low probability play. At best, you are 50-50.
Right.
And that's a receiver with strong hands, right, who is a good matchup for the defender.
Right. That's Cooper
Kupp. Throwing to
a 50-50 ball for Cooper Kupp.
Yeah. Instead, you're throwing to a running back, which lowers your probability based on height differential alone. Okay.
Yeah.
And then based on the fact that he is not catching a lot of balls. So you're continuing to lower your probability of completing that pass and making that throw. And instead, and you have higher probability options designed into the play, but you're not progressing through the down. Now, I also think, again, like I agree with you, Rich, because I think it's both. I don't like that was called. And then I don't like the decisions that followed after the play got sent in.
I agree. And to me, you talk about the complementary, you know, play calling, and you spelled this out very well in your column that you, as you mentioned, is online, The Athletic, on the app, on the website. So everybody should read that for kind of a very nicely written, detailed version of this. But to me, if you hand the ball off to Cam Akers, what's the slightly pessimistic thing that happens there? He gains 2 yards, let's say. Then you've got fourth and two, which is a much different scenario. Like you said, maybe he picks up the first down. Maybe he gets 3 yards. But to me, it's like, even if you get relatively stuffed and you get 2 yards, okay, then you're in fourth and two. And then you're a little bit harder to defend. There's more things that you can do in that situation. So they don't do that. They call a pass play that neither one of us really like and don't think it was executed very well. So then you get to fourth and four, okay? This one, based on my understanding, and again, please interrupt me if I'm wrong, my understanding is that was the play call. They got the look that they wanted. They got the matchup that they wanted. They made the throw that they wanted, and it got broken up. It was a very nice play by the corner on the play. That's it, right? I mean, that was the play that they wanted. That's not something that Jared looked at and went, "Oh, I think I'm going to chuck it up to Gerald Everett here just for the heck of it." That's what they were looking for, as I understand it.
I do not accept that.
Okay, great. I'm glad.
No, I accept your presentation of it. What you're saying is fine.
Yeah.
What you're saying is fine. That's everything they said. We got the coverage we wanted. We got the look we wanted. That's the throw I wanted. I was happy with the throw. It was just a great play. I do not accept that logic and processing. I don't think that that's the play that you should, you need to reframe what you want.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
That's what I'm saying. Right. Like, first of all, first and foremost, yes. And we've covered this so many times on this podcast. Yes, it was the right decision to go for fourth down. It increased their game-winning chance, according to Edge Sports, by almost 3% going for it instead of settling for the field goal. Matt Gay had not attempted a 50-plus field goal for them yet. He was 5-for-8 last year on them. So they didn't know if that was going to be automatic for them, right? What you know is that you could probably gain 4 yards, and you're in a situation where you'd like to win this damn ball game. And at this point, why is that the play you want?
No.
That's what I have an issue with. Sure, you can say that maybe, you know, I saw some people who were like, Gerald should have, you know, contested it more. Mm. Okay, maybe, whatever. But it's kind of what we talked about just on the other side. You got to set up your players to do what they do well. Gerald Everett could have taken and just completely run over some folks on his way to 4 yards.
Right.
Like, he could have caught a short ball and gotten the yak. Any one of your receivers could have gotten that yak if you had to. And then the underneath concepts were also there. Cooper Kupp was coming open on an underneath route, and Sean McVay went out of his way to mention that as well, which is, again, as we were huddled over this laptop, you're seeing that. You're seeing Robert Woods, who I think had a right to maybe be a little bit frustrated in some of these situations if he was. And you know what? Like, I don't accept that that's what you want to do. On 4 yards, I don't accept that that's what you want.
No. It's a terrible play call. And that's where I go, you know, getting back and forth with people on Twitter. Like, you have to look at these individually. Like, that was the call. And I just thought it was a terrible call. And you can look at, well, maybe Jared should have put a little more air under, maybe he should have done this. Okay, but like, let's not lose the forest from the trees here. That was a terrible call on fourth down. Like, it can start there. Like, there's so many other things. You have Cooper Kupp, you have Robert Woods, you have Tyler Higbee who can make plays. I mean, like you said, one of the running backs. I mean, that was your play call on fourth down. I was baffled by that.
And maybe you think, hey, it's okay if you don't like the matchup with Gerald, or if you don't think you can lead him on the throw, or if you feel like he doesn't have the right leverage, or whatever you see as you kind of go through this play in the you know, milliseconds that you're diagnosing things, then you now have options designed underneath across the sticks that can get you the 4 yards.
Right.
That can get you that. And but this was like, there's no question. This is what I'm doing. This is what we like. This is what the call is. And so this is why I think it's both, because if you fail in that way where you're not progressing through the down into your other options, even though you have the ability to do it, but then you're still being set up to take that low probability risk play, or that low probability high risk play. Right. And that's still like, you're still being presented with that option. It's like, it's like when I accidentally like leave food out, like I leave a sandwich out on my coffee table and I go get the mail. Of course, the dog's going to eat the damn sandwich. Like, yeah. I mean, God, yeah. That's the thing. That's what bothers me. So it's when you look at these as a whole, when you look at these, both of these calls as a whole, they should have complemented each other, because you know you're going into four down territory. So yeah, that's, I think, one of the biggest issues here. They should have complemented each other. But then, even though you because you are a really smart offensive guy and you have a quarterback who can execute these throws when he has time, and you have all of these different options with all of these different guys who can do like 17 different things and then fly the plane home. Like, you have all of these options, and that's what you pick.
Yeah, that's what got me. Yeah, and again, you can say he could have gone through the progression. I totally agree. I thought the fourth down call, I mean, look, looking at it from Jared's, I thought the third down throw was terrible. Like, you don't make that throw. The fourth down, he almost had that, by the way. I mean, that was a very athletic breakup. I mean, if that CB doesn't, I'm sorry, I don't have his name in front of me, but if he doesn't time that, I believe it was May who was actually a safety, I think, who
Marcus May.
Yeah. Who, I mean, if he doesn't time that perfectly, I think Gerald Everett catches that ball and scores a touchdown. So that one I can almost understand where Jared's looking at and going, okay, I like this matchup. I think I can make this throw. And again, it was if that same play, if you replay that play 10 times, they probably get a touchdown on like 7 of those, if we're going to be honest. So I didn't hate the execution there. I still didn't like the play call. I still would not, 10 times out of 10, I still would not make that play call. But I think Jared has the opportunity to make a play there. And that's probably what he was seeing when he got to the line of scrimmage. So I don't fault him terribly on that. I just don't like the call, at all. So yeah.
And when I say like reframing what you want, I'm saying both Sean and Jared.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm not just saying that's on Jared. I also think though, I would think, and you would hope, because they've designed much of their offense to go around and to revolve around higher efficiency and higher probability plays, it was really odd to see that completely go out the window on those third and four and fourth and four calls. Because I don't, if I'm a play caller in that situation and I'm like, holy shit, the Jets might beat me.
Yeah, right.
I'm sitting there and I'm saying, what are my automatic plays? And yeah, I know it coverage dictates some things, but you have designed more automatic plays within that concept.
Oh, no question.
What are my more automatic plays? What are my valves here? Like what can I do to better complement this situation? And of course, yes, they're saying they got the coverage they wanted. Okay, that's great. But you still went for the low probability play, the play that said that we all sit there and week in and week out, every team in the league, and you have people that sit there and say, oh, almost had it.
Right.
Almost had it. That would have been great if it worked. That is always, almost always, the in a description of a low probability play.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a play that you look at the time, too. I mean, the turnover on downs there happens with 3:54 left. I mean, those are the kind of play calls that you make. It's if you've got 40 seconds left and you don't have any timeouts. And, you know, okay, then you can understand it. Like, we got to get a touchdown here. We got to get a chunk play. But not when there's that much time left. You could have easily just, okay, let's just get these 4 yards and let's move on. We'll get to the 33 or 32. We still got a ton of time left on the clock. You know, we're doing okay. We'll get closer to field goal range if need be. And then that's fine. You didn't need a touchdown there.
Yeah. Oh, and get this. Mm-hmm. This is what really killed me. I didn't even put this in the column because I was like, I'm going to need a Tums if I put this in the column. So I was looking at the next gen chart. So Jared Goff attempted 3 plays of 15 plus yards, right?
Yeah.
3 of them, one of them was an interception, and then the other 2 were those incompletions. Those are the only throws. Those are the only times that he threw quote unquote deep.
Yeah. Yeah. Just didn't look comfortable either. And again, I've been putting some heat on McVay, and I know I was on Twitter too, but yeah, Jared just had another one of those games where you can just tell, again, I say this all year, but it's so obvious to me when you look at him, he just does not look comfortable. And the other thing that I saw, I haven't really had time to go back. I want to watch the all 22 is the Rams did at times attempt to roll him out. You know, it's kind of the Jared Goff comfort food, you know, to roll him out and kind of get him going. But the Jets did a nice job. I don't know exactly how their coverage is rolled on those things, but he did not have time. Even when he rolled out, he didn't have time to make those plays that he normally did. So I don't know whether they were doing something different or whether there was just a breakdown there. But even the things that, that McVay can usually kind of go to that, okay, let's calm Jared down a little bit here. Let's just, you know, again, go for some comfort plays. They just weren't there. And so I credit the Jets for that a little bit too. But yeah, he didn't look. I'm not going to sit here and argue with people and say, oh, Jared Goff had a good game. He did not have a good game. I mean, 22 of 34, 209. He gets throws the interception, which was awful. Gets sacked three times, and the one that got reviewed and was turned into a sack. You know, again, you got to get rid of the ball. You can't hang in there. You've got to have that pocket awareness. So it was not a good game from him at all. But I'm just we'll go back where we started. You're not going to convince me that he was the main reason, or certainly not the sole reason, that they lost that game. There's a long, if you're going to have people line up, it's going to be a long line of blame. That's for sure.
Yeah, and then just to correct myself, my earlier stat too. This is kind of what I mean when I say, like, coach, if you're an efficient team, like they profess to be, and they are in so many phases, but just completely were not in so many ways on both sides of the ball on Sunday. You are not, again, like what we said about the defense. You're not asking your players to go outside of themselves. You're not asking. You're scheming in ways that you can succeed within your structure. And if everyone's succeeding within their structure, that wins you football games because everything's clicking in a rhythm, right? Well, that's very much the Jared Goff experience, right? Mm-hmm. So, but I'm looking at the, now I have his chart pulled up. And so 20 plus, this is a 20 plus yards play. The only two attempts of 20 plus yards were on those two fades. And right. So you didn't attempt that at any other point in the game. You didn't get your touch going. You didn't get a feel for it. That's your lowest probability play in your arsenal, and you're throwing it in a crucial game situation.
Yeah.
Game on the line, down 3 points, 4 yards to gain. You haven't thrown that ball. And I could go back and I probably count on, five fingers, maybe six or seven, the completions on that ball in the last several weeks.
Right.
And you have not thrown that ball one time during this game, but now you decide this is what we're going to do with 4 yards to gain. We're going to go 20 plus yards.
Yeah.
And incomplete both, incompletions both times. So that's where, but it's like what you said, it's like, okay, but it's both, it's everything. It's not just one. It's not one person. It's not like, it's not like Sean McVay's like sitting on Jared's shoulders, holding his head and preventing him physically from looking to his right in his progression.
That's right.
But it's also not like Jared's calling the plays for the game,
right.
So it's
right.
like, it's just everything. And then on the defensive side too. And we cannot go through this. And I know you mentioned it, but that Austin Corbett hold was an absolute killer because it took away points and it took away go-ahead points.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it would have been an 18-yard touchdown run by Cam Akers there midway through the third quarter. And yeah, it would have given the Rams the lead there. And I'm convinced if they would have scored a touchdown there, the Rams defense had been doing a good job. And again, they did hold the Jets. The Jets didn't score any more points for the rest of the game. So Rams defense did their job in the fourth quarter. But yeah, that was a killer. And then, of course, the one that we mentioned earlier, that set up these two plays that we've been talking about for the last 2 hours here. But the Tyler Higbee block in the back, if that doesn't happen, that's a 22-yard run by Cam Akers, and it takes it down to the 17-yard line. So then it's a whole different, then you're pretty much guaranteed at least to tie the game, and you'd be got a pretty good chance of scoring the go-ahead touchdown too. So you have two. I know, I saw people on Twitter, oh, they were two bad calls. Yeah, they were probably 50-50 calls, but the Corbett one, he definitely got his hand outside. I think that was, they showed it on the replay. Yeah. Are there 20 plays in a game like that where a guy gets his hand outside? Yeah, there probably are. But again, if the ref happens to see that one, then you're going to get flagged. So yeah, I mean, there's two plays right there. One took points off the board directly, and the other one indirectly, because they would have been in the red zone if not for that block in the back. So that absolutely contributes.
So the Rams, in losing this game, entering this game, they could have clinched a playoff spot. Now they have not clinched. I know there's some questions floating around on Twitter because there was some misinformation about oh, well, they actually did clinch based on some other records, but what other teams did. But no, they have not yet clinched a playoff spot. And so now it's coming down to like the simplest way to look at it, because there's a bunch of math involved, and you know, as we all know, that's my strong suit. But you just have to win out. Just win out. Seriously. I mean, like, that's just the easiest way to look at it, because then you get into strength of schedule and tiebreakers and things like that. And the Rams, of course, have shot themselves in the foot multiple times this year. So you really want to just win out.
Yeah. And it's still there. Look, I mean, as it sits now, Seattle 10-4, the Rams 9-5. Arizona 8-6. The Rams going to have a very tough game up in Seattle on Sunday. But if they should win that game, then both teams are at 10-5, and the Rams have beaten the Seahawks twice, so they're right where they want to be. And going into the last week against Arizona, but all these teams are going to be super motivated. That's the thing. I mean, Seattle with one more win, they get to 11-4, and they've got the division. Arizona's hanging there at 8-6. I think they're looking pretty good, but they're by no means are they locked in. A team like Chicago is still sitting there at 7-7 and could theoretically give them some problems. So all these teams are really motivated. And then there's just the idea of the Rams got to get a good feeling back. I mean, this is a real kick in the gut to lose to the New York Jets, and you don't want to. You don't want to have another loss going into the playoffs. You certainly don't want to have two losses and back your way in. So not only do they need the wins to potentially get back on top of that division, but they got to get some momentum here and start to turn things in the right direction, because this is not the game you want to have in late December.
Yes, and I completely agree with you. And it's going to be, I mean, this is like one of those real like sour, like you are now in history for the wrong reason, sour taste in your mouth. And you know, I really hate to end this podcast on a negative, because Rich, you know me, I'm an optimist.
Of course.
And maybe annoyingly so at times. But I think we should end on a couple positives. And one of the things that I do want to shout out is a couple of players that maybe are lesser heralded because they're playing with Aaron Donald on the defensive line. Michael Brockers and Leonard Floyd as a tandem, particularly against the run, outstanding.
Yeah.
Just outstanding. Michael Brockers was doing everything he could early on to set the tone defensively. And, you know, they just kept making those mistakes on third down in that first drive, but that was not for lack of effort from the old veteran Michael Brockers. And then that stand on third down against Frank Gore, you've got a combined age of like 100, all trying to move bodies. Frank Gore, Leonard Floyd, and Michael Brockers all just clashing against each other. And Leonard Floyd, just a superhuman effort. Yeah. Someone on Twitter, Benjamin Solak on Twitter, referred to it as that scene in Game of Thrones with Hodor holding the door. That was what Leonard Floyd was doing against Frank Gore. And I wish I could take credit for that analogy, because that's great. But it just was just outstanding. Leonard Floyd has just been just so good for the Rams. And then I also wanted to shout out Sebastian Joseph Day as well. And I'll let you maybe get a couple of guys on the offensive side, Rich, or special teams. But you know, Sebastian Joseph Day has just improved week by week. He and Morgan Fox, I think, have just been playing really well in their limited snaps. And that's something that's so key on this defensive line, is when you can take Aaron out every couple of snaps to spell him and then not worry about what happens to you during those downs. And you can mix up your fronts and your rotations. And I just really have been impressed with how those two have come along.
Yeah, absolutely. I really think that's where the focus should be. I mean, I think I always look at a guy like Robert Woods, and I think no matter what he does, he's still underrated. I thought he had another great game, but yeah.
I felt for him. He was open a lot.
I know, and he deserved a lot more than he got from that game. I think is a good way to put it. So yeah, but those two, that you can't understate. I mean, Leonard Floyd, I mean, he was at a pretty low, let's be honest, in his career, not unlike what Dante Fowler did when he came into the Rams in 2018. And I think the Rams had a similar mindset with those guys, and full marks to Leonard Floyd for coming in. And sometimes it's just a change of scenery, whatever it might be. But some guys, it just clicks, or you get a little bit older, you just get a little more experienced. And I'm sure there's a lot of Chicago Bears fans watching this going, who is this guy? Like, why couldn't we get this guy? So full marks to him for doing that. And Michael Brockers, we'll just end there. Yeah, this is a guy who you know, I think a lot of Rams, or I don't want to say a lot, but some Rams fans last year kind of went, oh, Michael Brockers, you know, he doesn't get the sacks. You know, you don't see the splash plays. But, you know, you watch a game and just watch him and the things that he does, and being able to get him back and even, you know, a little bit of a discount even after his deal with Baltimore fell through. Boy, you just can't underestimate what he brings to that front and also to that locker room, too. So, yeah, two great guys to shout out there.
Yeah, definitely. And also kudos to Coach Eric Henderson for just really being like such a heartbeat and a pulse for that group. And that's a lot of personality in one room. I mean, you've got Aaron Donald, Michael Brockers, A'shaun Robinson. You know, you've got Sebastian yeah. Joseph Day, Morgan Fox, Greg Gaines. You know, you just got just a lot of really, really talented guys. And Eric Henderson's done a really nice job with that group this year. So, Rich, it's kind of crazy to think about. We have gone through so many months now of the 11 Personnel podcast. And I got to tell you, I've just been enjoying every week, even on weeks like this where we just have to talk about just the crap bucket. You know, I just think it's been so much fun. And we really can't thank our listeners, subscribers, people who leave reviews and comments on our Apple podcast page. We really cannot thank you guys enough. And so we're really happy every week to remind you that if you subscribe to the 11 Personnel podcast via The Athletic podcast page. If you subscribe to The Athletic via the 11 Personnel podcast, Rich, what do you get?
You get an amazing discount. Jordan's favorite thing in the entire world. And I couldn't agree with you more, Jordan. I mean, we're getting to the end. Well, we'll have one more episode of 2020. But I remember when we started this thing at the start of the season and the middle of the pandemic, we're still in the middle of the pandemic, but we just thought, you know what, if this can just be a distraction, if we can have some fun and just, you know, to just forget about the problems for 3 hours a week and enjoy watching some football, then I think we'd consider that a win. And so appreciative of everybody, certainly, first of all, our subscribers who have hung with us through a really, really weird time and still give us a lot of encouragement. But everybody out there who listens, everybody, even if I get into it with you on Twitter, please know that I appreciate you and that I'm very grateful that we can have those exchanges and that we can, you know, have something kind of normal to talk about and debate. So but thanks, everybody. And I certainly hope everybody has a great you know, Christmas, if that's what you celebrate, or if you just a great holiday season in general. I hope everybody makes the most of it.
And I hope that we all, like Rich apparently is, I hope that we all sleep very soundly. Have a good one, guys.